you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Quick Slants, the podcast, is brought to you by Nissan. Go to ChooseNissan.com today for early year savings on all your favorite Nissan models. That's ChooseNissan.com.
Today on Quick Slants, the podcast, there is still some detritus remaining from Super Bowl 53. The Patriots have won 6 Super Bowls, and we've had a heady week. But we've also got the mic'd up stuff to kick through. Coaching staff moves. Is Julian Edelman a Hall of Famer? Hot topic, real hot topic. Unsung stars of the Super Bowl. And a brief look ahead to free agents. Finally, the triumphant return, pardon me, of News Go. All that and more on Quick Slants Podcast.
How you doing, Phil?
Great. Doing great. How are you?
John Henry the Skull Crusher?
I'm doing fantastic.
We're not in the same room. We're not in the same room.
Yeah, logistically, folks, there's an app called Opal. And I am at the Lakeville office of NBC Sports Boston, in the Lakeville office. And I'm potting from there. Phil is in the Burlington studio along with the Skull Crusher. You don't need to know any more than that, but I hope that the quality of this is outstanding in terms of auditory abilities, you know, auditory aesthetics, because I tell you, content-wise, it's going to knock your face off. Okay. My first things first, Phil.
That's aggressive.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Look, I wanted to find something new to talk about at the top, and I was stunned to find out that we really hadn't talked about the fact that not only did the Patriots go back to the Super Bowl as a previous loser for the first time since 1993, they were the first team in 46 seasons to go back to the Super Bowl and win it a season after losing. 72 Dolphins got their faces ripped off by the Cowboys in 1971. Bob Lilly. Had about a 24-yard sack on Bob Greasy in one of those awful Super Bowls. And then the next year they won 14-7 over the Washington Redskins in yet another awful Super Bowl. But the Patriots become the first team to repeat, excuse me, to go back after a Super Bowl loss. And Phil, they did it after a year in which we spent a lot of time talking about how they would ever get over the psychological dent of the Malcolm Butler decision. A Super Bowl, they could be sitting here with 3 right now in a row. Not to get greedy, but you and I think everybody else, really thought it was going to leave a dent.
Totally, and I think that's why you could argue 2018 as Bill Belichick's greatest coaching job. This was a team that a lot of us felt talent-wise didn't have enough to get there, but it's that thing that you're talking about, that cloud kind of hovering over the team from the get-go, from OTAs, from last year's Super Bowl. And being able to deal with that and get past it and still get to where you got and win the whole thing, that puts it up in terms of the elite coaching jobs that Belichick has done. And we know the list is long. I wrote about this during Super Bowl week, pulled a lot of people, including you, that covered the team in 01, still cover the team now, guys that played for Belichick, guys that played against that Patriots team in 01, and asked people to kind of gauge where 18 might fall, and a couple people, including our buddy Mike Reese at ESPN and Troy Brown, said that if they won in 18, you could put it right up there with the best jobs that Belichick has ever done. And I don't think, you know, you wrote about the Butler aspect of it. That's something that certainly shouldn't be overlooked, because I feel like that was a significant hump, significant thing, however you want to describe it, to get over.
But he broke that dish. You know, that to me is part of the...
Sure.
That's why I downgraded 18 relative to seasons like 2010, where it was just a stunning renovation of the roster. You know, they broke that dish with Malcolm Butler. To me, I do that a lot. To me, to this guy, when you look at the teams that are torn asunder by decisions that coaches make that spark bitterness, and the fact that the Patriots didn't, you know, they did. I mean, they were, it was kind of the capstone to a year of agitation for, I think, the Brady Gronkowski, Amendola, maybe some other guys who were less vocal about it contingent. But Belichick just sat there and said, well, he never gave it any traction. He never gave it the ability for everyone to have their say, to sit around. And Mayo, remember, Phil Mayo just kept saying, well, Bill will open his door. He'll keep an open door. And everybody, you have a question, he'll answer it. Even if you don't like the answer, he's going to answer it. I don't think that was ever done with Malcolm Butler. And still, these guys were able to pocket their agitation and say, well, Dad said so, I guess.
Right. And that's why he handles it the way he does, is so that you can push past it, I guess, as quickly as possible. Don't you think, too, Tom, some of this gets back to the quality of the guy that is really kind of at the core of this team? When you look at guys like the McCourties, when you look at Brady, you look at Edelman, you look at Slater, you know, the nucleus of this team is made up of players that would be more likely to get past something even as, you know, catastrophic seemingly as the Butler benching and come back the next year and win a Super Bowl. Like this sort of happened in Seattle with Pete Carroll, and it wasn't even as egregious a decision to throw it at the goal line, I don't think. And that team was torn apart.
Yep. And it wasn't, to me, with them, it's not that they were, and I know that you're not insinuating this, it's not that they were bad guys.
No.
It's just everybody had a voice. Everybody gets a voice out in Seattle. You know, there's a coaching staff, but they're not necessarily the ruling class there. Everybody's going to have a vote. You know, it's, and here, that's not how it works. And that's why Tom Brady has never been involved in personnel decisions, though he would love to be, though there are occasions where he has tried to, you know, call Bill, and Devin has, you know, called Bill and say, can we get Jason in here? And Bill doesn't go, yeah, you know, whatever you want. We get that guy in here. Yeah, you guys are going to be psyched. We're geek for that.
That's
he said, maybe. And then they'll do it or they won't do it. But I think if you look at Seattle, they were all empowered to have their voices heard. You know, they were okay with treating Russell Wilson the way that they did. And Pete said, well, that's just how we compete. You know, these guys, high compete level. Sometimes, you know, guys are going to say things. But, you know, here, there's a ruling class, and that's the way it's got to be. Brady's not involved in personnel. Kraft is not involved in personnel. You know, as much as people want to be convinced that Jimmy Garoppolo was traded at the behest of Robert Kraft, Belichick rules. And that's why everyone has to – as Belichick said to me a long time ago when a guy was holding out, I can't even remember the player. I don't know if it was certainly in the aughts, not in this portion of the decade. And I said, well, what are you going to do if he doesn't report? And he goes, what's he going to do, open a mechanic shop? It's like, I don't care. Eventually, these people will understand that they're the employee and I'm the boss and they have to come in. So that was just my take on one aspect of what we saw in Atlanta and what unfolded, because we've gone through the game fairly well, but I still do want to go through the game, Phil. Anything else you want to tie up on that topic?
No, I think we hit it pretty well there. It's just, it is fascinating that they are going to be able to avoid the fate that has been set upon a lot of these teams that lose in the Super Bowl. I mean, look at the Falcons. They had that thing won. And they, you know, have kind of more quietly gone into the night compared to the Seahawks. But into the night, nonetheless, they go. Because it's just, for whatever reason, they haven't been able to sustain the way the Patriots have. I think some of that is coaching. I think some of that is the quarterback. I think some of it is roster building. I think you lump it all in together. And they've been able to do something that no other team has done in 50 years. It's remarkable.
Speaking of coaching, did Sean McVay get exposed, not in terms of here's a guy who's never going to be able to make it in the league. I feel as if he did get exposed in terms of a lack of decisiveness, kind of caught looking at the stage lights and the gushing about the opportunity in the present. I can't wait to see what the Patriots got for us. And really, you guys are okay, right? You okay? I just felt as if there was a lack of decisiveness on his part. And I don't blame him, because that is one characteristic of Bill Belichick that has stood out throughout his coaching career, is decisiveness. He's going up against a 66-year-old coach with a 42-year-old whatever offensive coordinator and a 41-year-old quarterback. We gave too little credit, perhaps. Actually, I kind of banged the drum for it. Maybe we gave too much credit to the idea that Sean McVay was just going to be able to come out like Doug Peterson did and do what happened. But that 2017 team, the more I look at it, Phil, was just a lesser team. What do you think?
Yeah, it's always a fascinating discussion. How much does experience matter? Does it matter at all? And I think when you look at some of the Sean McVay sound from before the game, where he's talking to Bill on the field, and he's just so glowing, and he's so over the top. Hey, you're the best, man. You're the best. You know, it's wow, this is pretty wild, isn't it? Like, it felt like a guy who was a little overhyped, maybe, even though I think that's kind of how he carries himself all the time.
Absolutely.
For me, I look at it as more of a scheme thing that I think got exposed, Tom. Now, the other stuff may be part of it too, just how he handled the moment. But I think what we saw from the Rams really, you know, throughout the latter portion of the season, as you saw Jared Goff's numbers start to slip, you saw their overall numbers start to slip a little bit. It was a team that was still pretty clearly in the infancy of its scheme. You know, I think one of the reasons why Bill Belichick respects Sean McVay as much as he does, and I do think he respects him a whole lot, is because he's an outside-the-box thinker. He has taken a scheme that's been around for decades, and he's really made it his own with a handful of the things that the Rams do that nobody else does, with these missile motions and the tight splits. This was Sean McVay's offense, period and end of story. But
and they don't have great receiver talent.
They don't. I think they're good. Like, I think Robert Woods is good, and I think Brandon Cooks is good. Are either of them like a true number one? Maybe not, but it's, you know,
they're not a complimentary
2A and 2B.
Cooper Kupp would have made a big difference. You have to have a complimentary guy. I think
that's a huge part of it. And that's sort of what I'm getting at is needed a little bit of a Patriots style quick passing game. I mean, it felt like for the Rams, if there was nothing there on the ground, that meant there was nothing there via play action, and that meant their passing game was dead. It was as though if there wasn't anything down the field, they just couldn't throw it, period. We hardly saw any screens. We didn't see any, you know, snap it one step from under center, throw it out wide, you know, wide receiver type screens, even just little slants. Like, we didn't really see a whole lot of that. That's stuff that the Patriots live on when they're facing a good pass rush. And the Patriots had a good pass rush that night, and they stopped the run that night, and the Rams just didn't have anything to beat the Patriots in terms of a quick pass game. And I think that's got to be maybe kind of like the evolution of the scheme. And I think it will evolve. It will. He's still so young. McVay's so young. They're going to get better. That scheme's going to get better. But they obviously missed out on a huge opportunity.
Also, too, you mentioned throughout the week just the inefficiency of the Rams defense against 21 personnel. Anything that had two backs or multiple tight ends. And I'm getting ahead of myself vis-a-vis the budget that I put out here to talk about, but James Devlin should get the Golden Battering Rams Award for what he did to Mark Barron throughout the game. Oh, my God. And you said that. You're like, Tom, they're so small up front. On the Sony Michel touchdown, I wonder if he has stopped pissing blood yet, Mark Barron. He got hit so hard, and he got hit so hard so many times by James Devlin.
And it was clear on the touchdown run that he just wanted no part of it anymore. That wasn't going to be the play that won the game. Right.
I know I'm supposed to go here, and I'm going to go here, but I can't do this again.
Exactly. I think they beat him into submission. And, you know, we talked to players after the game. They knew that entire front, and especially the defensive line, including Aaron Donald, including Ndamukong Suh. They felt like those guys were winded. And if you watch, and there's been so much great NFL films stuff, whether it's on Showtime or it's Turning Point, you know, that last drive, not the last drive, but the touchdown drive, You know, Joe Tooney had Aaron Donald one-on-one on that pass that Brady threw to Rob Gronkowski for the 29-yard gain to set up the score. That's a matchup Donald should win every time, and he actually went back to the bench, and he said, guys, that's on me. That drive's on me. I got to win my one-on-ones. But he couldn't. I think they were a little bit gassed, and I think that's why you see the Patriots do so much of the conditioning that they do, is so that in games like that, late in the season, late in the game, they're good to go.
Yeah, and in the first carry of the series, too, Sony Michel rips off that 25-yard. I think it was the first play of the series. Ndamukong Suh took himself out. He tried to hit a home run. Just did a swim move, basically hurtled into the backfield, and I was like, oh, okay, there you go. Our running back just ran the other way, so sorry about that.
I think that was the next drive. That was that four-minute drive where they really killed a lot of clock, but they did that a couple times. Then Burkhead ended up having a long run. You just saw those lanes, those running lanes, start to really open up. Where earlier in the game, they really weren't there. Like, the first drive of the game was great for the Patriots. 13-yard run, Sony Michel, 5-yard run, Sony Michel. And, you know, I did a halftime show, and the question was, well, why didn't they stick with the run? It was like, well, you know, they looked great on the first drive. Did you watch the second drive? Because it was 1 yard, it was minus four, it was one, it was two, it was one, it was zero. It was, they just couldn't get it going after that. So they had to not abandon it, obviously, because they stuck with it well enough to be able to do what they did at the very end of the game. But it was not as effective as it could have been, as the numbers said it would have been going into the game.
Yeah, they had to body punch for a while. You mentioned the mic'd up stuff. Let's get into some of that right now. There was a comment that caught my ear and my eye, and it was a comment actually made by Chris Shula, assistant linebackers coach, grandson of Don Shula, said to Sean McVay prior to the game, it's about $1.50 of the NFL Films rendition of the mic'd up, looks at Brady, goes, I'm a fucking pretty boy. And he says it to McVay, and McVay doesn't even make eye contact. He goes, well, it's kind of what they're supposed to look like. To me, that hinted at – these are just observations. There's no great thing I have to take from – to me, that hinted at a team that, again, per usual, takes Brady as kind of soft, not tough, we can get to him, or at least they're trying to mentally convince themselves of that.
I think it's probably – it's got to be more the latter, right? It's just you look at a guy – in warmups, it's the first time you get a real up close look at him, and you say to yourself, just to get yourself going, we can beat this guy. We can take him. Look at him. Look at him. What is he, a model? Is he got a green? Does he get some sort of kale shake on the bench?
Why is he so perfect?
Why does he walk like that? Because he does have a funny walk to him. You know why? I've asked him about it. Because he tries to keep his hips rolled forward when he walks.
What? Okay.
I'll show you later.
You gotta explain that to me.
I'll show you later.
Rolled
you have to keep
hips?
Your butt, you gotta keep your hip pointers rolled forward and under so that your ass doesn't stick out. Put you in better balance. Awkward McVay. We talked about that.
I need to see a slow motion breakdown of that.
I'll show you. No, I got it. Right. You do the voices. I do the walks. Okay. Brady saying, I ain't making another mistake voice, I thought was an interesting admission of guilt and redoubling of efforts, Phil.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I thought Edelman going to Gronk at the very end of the game, I think right before that touchdown drive started, and said, hey, Gronk, need you, buddy. You know, we need you here. I need one. You know, just trying to implore a guy who may have needed a little nudging at different points this year.
Yep.
You know, hey, this is it. This is, you know, this is probably the end of it here. You know, if not for this game, for, you know, who knows how long for us as a group. And so I thought that was fascinating, because obviously Gronk ends up coming through with that wheel route catch that I thought maybe is a little bit underrated now, because the 29-yarder was just so perfectly thrown by Brady. And, you know, this acrobatic diving catch, we've seen him make so many of those over the course of his career. But that little wheel route up the sidelines, not a route that he runs all that often, but he comes through there, and then with the big catch down the end as well. I thought, you know, we're ranking so many things now. Everything gets ranked. And Gronkowski was asked, was that maybe your most clutch catch ever? And he kind of shrugged his shoulders. And I don't know, you tell me. I've had a few. Something to that effect. And I think he could put it right up there. I mean he's only played in two Super Bowls that they've won. Right?
Well, let's go with, I would say the most clutch catch he ever made was the 4th and 10 or 4th and 1. I can't remember. Maybe 4th and 10 at Denver, that 50-yard dime that Brady dropped in on him.
Oh, yeah.
down the middle of the field, and they didn't win the game.
Did he have 2 fourth-down catches on that drive?
I don't know, but that one was ridiculous. Were you at that game?
He was a monster at the end of that game. No, I was not. I was in the Burlington offices.
Thank God we travel now. Well, both of us travel, because it's good to compare notes. Okay, and the last one in the mic'd up stuff that I got a kick out of was Belichick just talking to Flores and Brendan Daly. Look, we got maybe 15 calls. I have this here. We got maybe about 15 calls left in this game. Let's go through them and get them right. Let's know what we're going to call here. Make sure we have the right personnel in the game, know what we're doing. I just think it's interesting to see the way he just, you know, basically takes people's faces in his hands and says, focus, this is what we need to do.
And isn't it interesting, the opposite sideline, you have a coach who's great at what he does, but is an offensive coach, is an offensive coordinator, and has his head in a play sheet at all times. I think there's even a moment on one of these mic'd up segments where they get a shot of McVay, and he's looking down at his sheet while the Patriots offense is on the field. And they make a big play, and he looks up like, what was that? What happened? And
I'll tell
you. It's just so different. Your responsibilities are different. When Bill Belichick's a head coach, he can control that sort of stuff. And I think that's actually what's going to benefit, not to get too sidetracked, but I think that'll benefit Brian Flores to be one of these, you know, kind of younger generation coaches who doesn't have the play calling responsibilities for either side of the ball. I think it just frees you up to do that other stuff.
And that's why you bring in Jim Caldwell. And that's why you bring in Greg Schiano. That's why, you know, these older guys don't – not to say that young guys can't do it. They certainly do. I think we have plenty of people who think old guys can't do it. The fact that he could look at his play sheet and Wade Phillips should have the defense pretty much set and did for most – the majority of that game. But you need to be able to be the overlord, and Belichick could defer to Flores to, look, B-Flow knows what we want. B-Flow knows what we're looking for. He's got the latitude to make some calls. I'm sure that he didn't call that Daron Harmon blitz, you know, in the result in the Gilmore pick without saying, Bill, I'm calling that here. Right?
Oh, yeah. No, they're all on the head. I think everybody's at least listening in on that, whether your mic is on or not. From what I gather, I mean, it can be pretty chaotic on the headset there, but everybody right. knows what's coming. And if Bill doesn't want it, I think he has, you know, he obviously has the latitude to say, hold on, let's go with cover two. If he wanted to, but I think it yep. just shows. And even when he said to Daly and to Flores, hey, 15 plays left here. I don't think he's listing out the 15 plays. I think he's saying to them, get your 15 plays right. Let's make sure we're all on the same page here.
Right.
Let's go do it.
Yeah. What, you know, the shit that you're going to call if it's at X, Y, or Z, we're our third down and 5+ calls. But, let's talk coaches now, because we've got a little bit of attrition has gone on, which inevitably it would have. It could have been a hell of a lot worse had Josh McDaniels gone last year and taken Joe Judge with him. But it's still, you know, there are holes to fill now that Brian Flores has filled out his staff a little bit, Phil.
Big time. I don't know. Would you call it a brain drain? I think it's significant, the losses that they've incurred here going down to Miami.
Chad
O'Shea is going to be the offensive coordinator in Miami. You have Jerry Schaplinski, who was the assistant quarterbacks coach here, assisting Josh McDaniels, worked closely with Jacoby Brissett and Jimmy Garoppolo last few years, had good results with those guys. He will be going down to Miami as the assistant.
And Bill has always been very high on Schaplinski, not that he wasn't on O'Shea, but on Schaplinski, Phil. I think that you've talked to him about him many times.
Yeah, and he's sort of one of those guys who doesn't get a ton of credit because he doesn't have a position all his own, and he won't have a position all his own when he goes to Miami. He'll be working with Caldwell, who is the offensive coordinator slash quarterbacks coach. Or sorry, no, the assistant head coach slash quarterbacks coach for Flores. O'Shea is going to be the offensive coordinator. And I think it's a pretty easy fit for O'Shea, and I was surprised, not that we knew who was going to be the offensive coordinator if Josh McDaniels left and went to Indy last year, but if he hadn't been the guy, it would have been a little surprising to me because he's so involved in the game planning. He was the red zone, you know, he was the head of the red zone offensive preparation every single week. It's obviously a pretty critical part of the game. So I think it'll be a pretty seamless fit for him down there. You have Josh Boyer, who was the cornerbacks coach here. Now he's going to be the defensive pass game coordinator, I believe, slash cornerbacks coach in Miami. That's a position that I did not know existed before today.
Have they named a defensive coordinator?
Yes, so that's actually Patrick Graham, who was a former Patriots linebackers coach. He left went to the Giants briefly, and then was most recently with the Packers. So another Patriots connection there. He's going to be the defensive coordinator. Are we forgetting anybody?
No, I think that's it.
They hired a handful of other coaches, special teams, you know, offensive quality control, Tyquan Underwood, former Patriots receiver. So I think that's it for the Patriots connections. But there are a lot of holes to fill. Like you said, you've got a receivers coach who's gone. You've got a corners coach who's gone. You have a linebackers coach in Flores who's now gone. And you have an assistant quarterbacks coach who's gone.
And to them, I all say, Godspeed, good luck. There's not a single one of them I have had extremely long conversations with, but I've had enjoyable conversations with all of them. They treated us well, but I think they're screwed. You know, they just don't have a quarterback. They're going to chop Danny Amendola off, which I understand.
Given the roster?
Frank Gore is 64 years old.
Frank Gore is 64. Yes, that's right. He was a 71, 72. Yeah.
happy birthday, Frank.
I think the one reason why that sort of situation benefits them is that it feels like it gives everybody a little bit of time. Like, ownership has to know we've got no shot here for 3 years based on what the roster looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so at least you've bought yourselves a handful of years to get something established. This isn't going to be a one and done or two and done type situation. I don't think. I don't know Stephen Ross that well, but that would seem to be fairly insane if you're hiring this group and you know things aren't really settled on our roster. We're going to give them time to figure that out.
I want to get now into free agency and some of the Patriots guys who are going to be when the league year begins about March 13th or so, which is a month, the guys we're going to hit. So let's start with the kicker, Steven Gostkowski. You re-up with him, I would say. You know, I know he's working on a deal that paid him like $4.3 million per year last year. His cap hit was $5 million. His salary was $3.2 million. So that's the cost of doing business. Tough shit. I don't care. You know, it's to have a guy who's going to make field goals for you, to have a guy who the quarterback thinks. I know he's in his 13th year. He's 35 years old. What do you think, Phil? Should they look elsewhere or stick with Stevie? I mean, you should always keep your eyes open, right?
Should always keep your eyes open. Is there any danger of him retiring, you think, Tom?
Oh, that's a good question. Sometimes I wonder how much fun he has.
Same. And I just refer back to a conversation he had with reporters. This was years ago. So this doesn't mean that anything is imminent, obviously, because he's been around. This probably happened. This may have happened in 14 or 15. He had a long conversation with us, and he can be very, go very in depth in terms of how he's feeling and be very in tune with his emotions at the time. And I think he's pretty good at keeping that sort of stuff in check. But at the time, he basically said to us, I've done more than I ever could have expected. And I look at every single year of this job as sort of gravy, as sort of icing on the cake. And so that's almost the anti-Brady stance on your career and how you're approaching it as you get towards the end. I wonder, he's at the end of his contract. He's won a few Super Bowls. He's the team's all-time leading scorer. He's done some tremendous things in his career. And I wonder if he says to himself, you know what, I'm good now. I think I'm good. This is a lot of stress, I want to spend time with my family.
And he's got kids, he's got family, so, you know, is he going to be in a situation where he'd say, you know, I want to go see if I can make $6 million and kick indoors somewhere, or does he just say, this was good, I'm good.
Right. So I don't know what you do. Like, you can't depend, obviously, the new league year comes way before the draft does, right? So you can't say, well, we're just going to draft a guy so you can go, you know, go find another job somewhere else, Steve, or if you decide to retire, that's great with us. So I would try to bring him back. But reasonable, obviously.
Yeah, 2 years, and well, 2 years, Steve, expect us to bring somebody in this year, and we'll talk at the end of this next year. You'll probably make the team, and maybe you won't.
Bring Ryan Allen back, too? You bring Ryan Allen back? He's a free agent as well.
I'll tell you what, I wrote in my preview with Ryan Allen, that he's a big game kicker because he is.
He was the other night.
And he always is. He never lets you down. He's a very good pressure kicker. In those big games, you never go, well, Jesus Christ, Allen killed them. The bigger the stakes, the higher the stakes, the more effective he is. He does have some games in the middle of the year where you're like, well, it's another 37-yarder, huh? That didn't go very far. But I think
And have you ever had an issue with any of his holds? Like, I can't remember a bad Ryan Allen hold. Right. And that's a small thing, but it's and I think still that a thing.
Group gets along. The group is, and they usually are, because they're trapped together, Cardona, Allen, and Gostkowski. But do you want to screw with the chemistry?
Right.
Because there's chemistry there. So, yeah, I don't – but they did try and replace Allen this
they
past
did.
Year.
I thought he responded well, though. This felt to me like one of, if not his strongest season.
Maybe, but they tried to hide. They tried to hide C-Bomb Bajorquez.
They did. I know. They wanted to keep him around. And the Bills ended up taking him. I think he got hurt with the Bills, so he ended the season on IR. But,
explosive.
But, yeah. I just – it was nice for Ryan Allen, too, I think, to kind of get the best of Johnny Hecker. The guy that he couldn't beat out,
yes,
at Oregon State back in the day, had to transfer to Louisiana, and obviously ended up having a great career. But how about that? Two walk-on punters at Oregon State end up in the Super Bowl.
That is amazing. Let's roll through these next couple important guys real quick in about 3 minutes. Crusher, what do we have for time?
32 minutes.
Huh. We might not have to skip the news. Go. Cordarrelle Patterson, why not bring – holy shit, he was $4.2 million last year to return kickoffs and catch a few passes?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know on that. Jason McCourty, he'll probably make the decision for them, I'm feeling, but his mind could change, as could his brother Devin. That'll be a very fascinating thing to watch play out.
Definitely.
And Trey Flowers is
That's
the
big
other
one.
Big one. And Chris Hogan, I can't imagine Chris Hogan is looking at this and saying, I've got to get back to New England.
I don't think so. Although it's a pretty shallow group, he might look at it and say, oh, I'm going to be the number two again as it stands
and then
right
Josh,
now.
Josh, so if we said Josh Gordon, Trey Flowers.
Trent Brown, you got to put in there. Any Jesus thoughts Trenton, on Trent Brown
oh, yeah.
lasting?
Trenton Brown. He made 583 last year. So he's going to be in line
He is the best tackle on the market. I don't think he's coming back. He's going to get paid.
Isaiah Wynn.
He's going to get
paid. Isaiah Wynn.
Yeah, I think you just say to yourself, yeah, we drafted the guy in the first round. We'll see how the Achilles holds up. But, yeah, I think you got your good year out of Trent Brown. I would be a little bit wary of giving him a ton of money. A guy who's had some weight issues and admitted days before the Super Bowl that he's not a big film guy.
Would you be surprised if Marcus Cannon retired?
I guess I wouldn't be shocked. He's played
like
a long time
surprised.
Now. He's played a long time, but I would be a little surprised. He's still under contract. Is he just one more year under contract?
I don't know. There are
he signed
times
a deal
when
a couple
catch,
years ago.
When you catch the fatigue from guys a little bit sometimes, or that they're closer to the end than the beginning. But you know, Marcus Cannon is in so much a different place than he was after 2015 and into 2016. He's just relaxed. He's seems more at peace. Then again, it's not like I'm driving around town with Marcus Cannon, you know, playing video games. But you just encounter him, and a prickly personality who was very suspicious of people trying to screw him and be negative around him. He's finally said, you know what? Who cares what they are? To me, Phil, yes, you're in there more than I am. Or
agreed.
Have been.
Agreed. I felt like for the first time I was able to develop a little bit of a relationship with Marcus Cannon this year because he was very wary of media before this season. I think the Patriots are hoping he can come back. Having continuity on that line is huge for them. And if you can go in with four of your starting five, you know, maybe you lose Brown, but if you got four of five, that's pretty good. If you're down to three of five, that starts to make it a little tougher.
Couple other items here. That's the free agents that we're going to talk about. We'll obviously throughout this offseason, Phil and I are going to divvy up for NBC Sports Boston. And on all our platforms, we will have digital. We will have with Boston Sports Tonight an early edition. Quick Slants will continue on Tuesdays throughout the offseason. And, of course, on NBCSportsBoston.com, we'll be covering the hell out of free agency, the draft,
And getting out on the road, I'm actually going to go to Puerto Rico later this month with the McCourties, who are doing an event. Yeah, they're going to the Roberto Clemente camp, which is – and they're going to run a foundation orientation to football and flag football for kids in Puerto Rico, and also have, you know, a lot of mentoring and things like that. The NFL will be involved. The Patriots will be involved. Planet Fitness will be involved. Puerto Rico, the Intercontinental Hotel, Puerto Rico. So JetBlue, I believe, is also involved. So we're looking forward to that. I'll get you more of those details, but that'll be later in February. Phil's got the combine. Yay.
Yay. We got to talk to the powers that be on that, but I'm hoping so. Either way, and we're going to have, when you're talking about audio that people are going to be able to access, we're going to be doing something called the Next Pats podcast. We've been doing the Expats podcast. It. That's getting a break. Rob Ninkovich on vacation. Guy worked hard for us all year. We're going to start doing the Next Pats podcast. So draft, free agency, we're going to do a bunch of interviews.
I didn't get that. Now I get it.
The when Next they, Pats. Said, we're talking about the Next Pats. So love we'll it. Do our prototypical Patriots series that has always been in written form online the last handful of years, and the people seem interested in. We will continue to do that. We'll talk to some of those guys for the podcast, as many of them as we can scoop up. So keep an eye out for that.
And we will hit news go. You know what? We'll be back at you on Tuesday. I don't know if Phil's going to go up to Burlington or not, but I have to go up there for Slants. It's a privilege. It's not I have to. But we'll probably hit a massive news go at that point. And we'll have also an original content, the Julian Edelman thing. Skull Crusher, can you drop in the Julian Edelman original content piece if it's done? If it's not, well, then, folks, this is the end of your podcast. This was great. Crusher, great. From the Lakeville office, I'm signing off.
Signing off from Burlington.
Thank you, Tom. Edelman's not 10-4. Ready yet. It will be out soon. Check out Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Holler.
That's a tease.